We are ready to proceed in the second case. D3000, Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, the FFLC.
May it please the court, Mr. Reagan Birch will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, members of the court. There is one central and I think very simple issue in this case, and I would like to proceed directly to that issue, and that is whether the testimony in this case concerning statements made to Ms. Portilla by various managers constituted evidence of a contract that her employment would not be terminated except for good cause. And that was the issue that was submitted to the jury, whether Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company had agreed that it would not discharge Ms. Portilla except for good cause. The evidence in support of the jury's verdict is summarized on page 10 of our application. And I'll go over just a portion of it. I know the court has familiarized itself with this. Statements were made to Ms. Portilla on the job by managers to the effect that you just keep up the good work. You've got a job here as long as you want to. You do a good job for Goodyear, Goodyear will take care of you. If she took care of Goodyear, Goodyear would take care of her. You know, you work for the company and the company will take care of you. Another example, Hortensia, as long as you're doing your job to the best of your abilities and we're not having any problems, you do not have a problem with Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. Under basic principles of contract law, and particularly in the employment context, a contract is not formed unless terms are reasonably definite and certain. And there are no definite and certain terms in this record to support the formation of a contract. The Court of Appeals failed to acknowledge here the absence of any clear and unequivocal terms in the alleged agreement. That failure guts the at-will principle. The assurances here simply don't rise to the level of a contract, and that is our basic argument. The Texas Employment Law Council, in their excellent amicus brief, cover this point very well at pages 5 to 14. Texas Association of Business has also briefed this point in some detail. The presumption of at-will employment in this state creates a heavy burden on a plaintiff who would rebut that or overcome it by an oral contract. A plaintiff in the circumstances of this case should be required to prove that she and her employer had a contract that specifically provided and directly limited the employer's right to terminate the employment at will.
If it had been in writing, would that have been different?
It might have been, Your Honor. Even in writing, the terms should be specific and should directly limit the employer's right to terminate the employment.
But you say we should not recognize a species of employment contract known as a satisfaction contract?
Your Honor,
whether written or oral?
I don't think we need to go that far in this case. Even if this were a satisfaction contract, it would not require the Goodyear show cause for termination of employment, and it would not prohibit a termination based on a policy such as the anti-nepotism rule here.
Why is it that it's interesting you bring up the nepotism rule when Goodyear apparently knew of the relationship for many, many years, if nothing, with regards to that?
Your Honor, that is a fact. The existence of the brother-sister relationship was learned by an auditor in 1975. He reported it, and as far as the record shows, there were changes in responsibilities, and the matter was simply lost and not acted on at that time. The same auditor did another audit in 1987. Reported the relationship again. The decision was made
that the policy should be enforced.
This is, what, 17 years later?
Yes, that's correct.
Didn't, is there a question of waiver in here somewhere?
Your Honor, I don't believe that there is a, there's not been a question of waiver that's been preserved in on this appeal. I think the question of waiver would arise only if Goodyear were required to establish a contractual right to impose or enforce a policy of this kind. Ms. Portillo was employed at will. It was not a contract changing her status, and therefore I don't believe the concept of waiver even applies. I would suggest to the court that this court in Hathaway versus General Mills and the Austin Court of Appeals in another case called Jennings versus Minco Technology Labs have recognized that an employer in an at-will situation can change conditions of employment. And even if there had not been a nepotism rule, I think Goodyear could have imposed one. I think they also had the right to reassert this one.
You're assuming here that this doesn't even rise to the level of a satisfaction contract.
Yes, sir.
Because a satisfaction contract is something more than at-will employment, is it not?
Your Honor, as I understand the satisfaction cases, they only require that the employer not be honestly dissatisfied if he or she terminates the employee for performance reasons.
At will is even less than day-to-day. It's moment-to-moment. It's at will, and you can change the conditions momentarily. You can walk out of the room and think of a new condition and come back and change it in an at-will situation. But if you have something like called a satisfaction contract, where the person is assured of employment so long as they perform satisfactorily, then you have to show some dissatisfaction with their performance, and you can't impose arbitrarily new conditions from moment to moment as you can in at-will. Even if that satisfaction contract does not rise to the level of a good cause contract.
Your Honor, as I understand the Texas cases on satisfaction contracts, they do not require that the employer have cause. One of the
I didn't say that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to argue with the court. They only require that if the employer terminated an employee because of dissatisfaction, that dissatisfaction be genuine and be honest and not be something that is pretending.
They relate to performance.
Yes. There are many causes or potential causes for discharge that don't relate to performance. For example, an act of dishonesty. That's a cause. And certainly someone under a satisfaction contract would be fired for that reason. There are other policies. Drug testing, for example, was involved in the Minco case. And
but Minco was at will. There was no satisfaction.
Well,
there was.
Again, Your Honor, I respectfully submit that under the satisfaction contracts, they don't deal with the question of cause. They only deal with the question of performance.
I understand. But it's more than an at-will contract. You have basically three different situations we're talking about. At-will, satisfaction, and good cause. You don't have to have good cause other than a failure of satisfactory performance to terminate someone under a satisfaction situation. But as long as they perform, you can't just walk in and arbitrarily and say, hey, you're fired because I don't want you here anymore. That's at will.
Your Honor, you can, again, I think the satisfaction contracts are not good law. But if you assume that there was a satisfaction contract here, it did not prevent Goodyear from terminating Ms. Portillo for reasons other than performance. And it didn't prescribe whether Goodyear had to act fairly, reasonably, or deal with the question of termination for causes other than performance.
If failing to transfer, where would you put that in? Is good cause for termination?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
And that was argued here?
Yes. There is no dispute that she was told repeatedly over the course of her employment that she was performing satisfactorily?
Your Honor, that was certainly implied in the statements that I just mentioned to you, that she was performing satisfactorily, and that there was no issue made of that in the trial.
There was no dispute at all that our suggestion that she was dismissed because of unsatisfactory performance?
No, sir. No suggestion. In any event, the jury here did not find a satisfaction contract. The issue that was submitted was whether there was an agreement that she would not be discharged except for good cause. And the evidence in this case simply does not support that finding by the jury. There is no evidence to support that kind of finding. I'd like to mention the case by the Michigan Supreme Court in Roe versus Montgomery and Ward and Company. That majority opinion could very well serve as our brief in this case. The Michigan Supreme Court, this court will remember, set off a explosion or flood of cases involving just cause or wrongful discharge claims. In Roe, that court backed off from the principle that it followed in a case called Toussaint, and held in effect that the kinds of assurances that are in this record do not rise to the level of a contract. In the Roe case, which is found at 473 Northwestern 2nd, 268, the court said that the decisions that had arisen since its initial decision were troubling because of those instances in which application of contract law is a transparent invitation to the fact finder to decide not what the contract was, but what fairness requires. And the court noted that calling something a contract that is in no sense a contract cannot advance respect for the law. The statement that an employee was at would have a job as long as she achieved her sales quota and was honest, in that case, were held not to form a contract. The court said the contractual obligation must be based on something more than an expression of an optimistic hope for a long relationship. And that's what we have in this case.
Did I understand you to say that there was not a finding that this was a contract?
I beg your pardon?
Did you just state that in this case there was not a jury issue as to whether there was a contract?
And yes, there was, Your Honor. In this case, there was the first issue was whether Goodyear had agreed that it would not discharge Hortensia Portilla except for good cause. In discussing that finding, the Court of Appeals in two instances discussed it in terms reminiscent of a satisfaction contract. They said that there was some evidence that an agreement that Portilla would not be fired as long as her job performance was satisfactory. They also noted that there was some evidence of a contract that she would be terminated only on a good faith determination that she was performing unsatisfactorily. And then finally, they said there was some evidence that the company would only, that they agreed they would only fire her for good cause. And there is, and that was the finding of the jury, of a contract for no discharge except for good cause. And again, the evidence in this record simply doesn't support that. The law on contract formation in the workplace, I submit, should be one that would yield a certain degree of certainty and clarity and not leave the formation of the contract to fortuitous statements that may be made on the job.
I'm concerned, however, that in the workplace you have a person who comes in as an at-will employee, no tenure, no security of any kind, and in an effort to encourage that person's best work effort and loyalty to the company and some relationship more than just a transient employee as far as the identity of the company is concerned. Company managers or company employees who are superiors come in and try to, and through those statements that have been described here, instill in that employee a false sense of security. Hey, you take care of us, we'll take care of you. You got a job here as long as you do a good job. That's more than saying, hey, you know, you're here at will, we can can you, but you know, before lunch. It does, in my mind, give rise to something more than you know, an itinerant, transient employee company relationship. The company is apparently trying to cultivate more than that with these statements. It's more than just morale. You're not patting them on the back saying, hey, you're doing a good job. You're saying, hey, you're doing a good job, and as long as you do that, you got a job.
Your Honor, I recognize the argument. It addresses the question of fairness, and I submit to you it's very much like the question that was involved in the last case. It's a question that really should be addressed by the legislature. Some legislatures have done that. There is a uniform state law that is.
But we're courts of equity as well as law, though.
I beg your pardon?
We're courts of equity as well as law.
Yes, sir. I recognize that.
Any further questions?
Thank you, counsel. Ready to hear arguments from respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. John Griffin, Jr. will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. The question really is, shouldn't an employee be able to talk to her manager and her regional manager about job security when her husband is a shrimper whose shrimping is seasonal and fluctuational? You know, I hear these arguments, and I've read these briefs, and the arguments are good arguments, and the briefs are good briefs. But in another case, because no one's contending an isolated remark, a one-of-a-kind statement, you're doing a great job, is going to create a contract. No one would contend that. No one would contend that an open-ended statement that where this court could not be sure of what the parties even intended would be enforceable. But yet, Mrs. Portilla is in the crossfire, I fear, between those who want to relax the at-will doctrine and those like my opposing counsel who want to place stricter hurdles on those who want to have contracts of employment. She doesn't belong in that crossfire. This case was decided on established contract principles. In our view, there is no special rule for contracts modifying at will. So, here we are with a record, a very fact-specific record, of a 55-year-old woman whose husband's a shrimper, who made repeated inquiries of her supervisors and her managers about her job security. And although they're not discussed in the petitioner's view of the evidence and in their brief, the court will see the record where at least three witnesses testified that she made inquiries about her job performance in the shrimping business well before the trial court and the jury.
Does the record reflect why she thought it necessary to keep this assurance?
Yes, because Johnny Shrimbo don't catch anything sometimes, and I've got to bring home money, and I've got two kids.
So she was telling her employer that her job was not secure, she was going to go shrimping or look for another job?
Well, the implication from the trial in Calhoun County was that she could go to Alcoa or someplace where there are steel workers where she could get more job security than if she was told honestly, Justice Gonzalez, you are at will, and we can hire and fire you when we want to because that's the at-will doctrine. So that is the context by which these questions were asked of her managers, was because of the need for her to be able to produce an income for her family with her children.
So she stayed with Goodyear for less money?
Beg pardon?
She stayed with Goodyear for less money and less security than she would have had in Alcoa?
Your Honor, the Goodyear person who testified said Goodyear paid better than some, worse than others, but Goodyear always stressed the job security aspect of the job. That's what the former Goodyear managers testified to at trial. That's what Goodyear stressed, although their pay wasn't as good as some, the job security was one of the things they stressed.
Did the Goodyear manager work for a contract or that will also?
Beg pardon?
To the managers.
He was...
Are they contract employees, or are they at will?
They testified, Your Honor, they were not at will, and that they were taught at their management training courses that they were not at will, and so long as they did their jobs properly, that Goodyear offered them job security.
So, in effect, there were no at-will employees at that store. They were all contract employees?
Your Honor, there's no evidence that any of them had a specific contract. We're talking about two...
Same contract as the 14th.
You mean if they
had... Same assurances.
If the same promises were made, that's right. They would not be at will, because those promises are the antithesis of at will. At will is a right employers have. Should they have the right, even though they have the right to be at will, should they be able to say to an employee, you're not at will. We're going to tell you things to keep you here for the avowed purpose, repeated Goodyear witness, for the avowed purpose of avoiding turnover and keeping the employees from looking for other work.
But didn't you just say the same thing you said to the manager?
Beg pardon?
Didn't you just tell us, though, that the same thing was said to the managers about as long as you have to do a good job, you've got a job?
What they were taught, Justice Hightower, was you are able to tell your employees they have job security.
No, you said that the managers worked under the same kind of conditions. But the managers were told that as long as they did a good job as managers, that they would have a job.
They were told that was the policy of Goodyear.
That was the policy.
That's right.
And so they told the same thing to this person.
That's exactly right. They testified that they had the...
So their situation was no different from hers.
Yes, Your Honor, a big difference between the witnesses from Goodyear who testified. They didn't go to their bosses and say, I want to know about my job security. Can I have an honest answer? They were in training seminars, Justice Hightower, and at those training seminars, they were taught to instill job security. They came away from those seminars with the idea that they were not at-will employees. We are not saying that those statements...
They say the managers were not at-will employees.
They were told that Goodyear employees were not at-will.
All right, and so they were to communicate to Hortensia that she was not an at-will employee.
That's exactly right, and they felt that was part of their job, and they felt the reason why that was part of their job was because Goodyear wanted to avoid turnover.
So she was really not an at-will employee.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not an at-will employee. This court has said in agreement similar to this that were in writing that when you agree to something inconsistent with at-will, then you're not at-will. And there is a modification to the at-will employment. And, you know, I've read the amicus briefs, and they're good briefs. But the Chamber's brief tells exactly what employers ought to do in case of to avoid lawsuits over contracts. The first thing you do is don't tell them they're not at will. Don't give them promises of job security. Second, don't teach your supervisors and managers to make promises and agreements with employees. Third, don't have an employment manual that says it's a two-way street and a mutual understanding designed to protect employees. Don't do that. The Chamber has said what employers need to do. That's what they can do. And this court has said what they can do. They can have the employee sign a statement that says no matter what you're told, no matter what you ask, you don't have a contract, as in Dutchman. Indeed, we had the opposite here. And I'm not saying to this court that the employment manual is a contract at all. But it sure is evidentiary of the intent of the company in making the agreement. And what I hear Goodyear saying is that this court ought to determine what Goodyear's intent was to make these promises. And if promises, they admitted they were. Who decides?
What's the difference between satisfaction and good cause?
Good cause is more protection to the employee. Honest bona fide dissatisfaction can be a reason to discharge a satisfaction employee.
What do we have here?
Good cause. Because it was measured not by the satisfaction of Goodyear, but measured by her job performance. There's a difference. Nowhere in this record was there any discretion given to Goodyear about their satisfaction with her. nor, as counsel has now conceded, there any question whatsoever that they ever were dissatisfied with their performance in any way.
What about this failing to move?
Beg pardon?
What about failing to transfer?
The jury found that Goodyear waived its right to enforce its nepotism policy and waived its right to transfer, and I believe they probably answered that question yes based upon Goodyear's witness who said that I agree that it is a contract when I negotiate a job with you and I tell you I can't transfer and you say I'm hired. He agreed on the witness stand that that was an agreement, that that agreement could not be changed except for with both the consent of both parties. And I assume that's why the jury answered that question. But yes, on her employment application, it had a blank on there that said, can you transfer? And she put no. And they agreed that when you tell someone, I can't transfer, and say, you're hired anyway, the jury properly found that based upon Goodyear's admission that that was a contract at trial, that it was indeed a waiver of their right to transfer her.
Mr. Griffin, in Winters v. Houston Chronicle and Sabine Pilot versus Hawk case, the court refused to create any exceptions to the will doctrine other than the performance of a legal act. To rule in your favor, do we have to create an exception or in some way overrule or take back what we said in Winters and Sabine Pilot?
Absolutely not.
How do we get there?
Okay, we get there in this way. This case is not over whether there's an exception to the at-will doctrine or not. Either there was evidence under this no evidence point to support the agreement or there wasn't. If there is no evidence to support the agreement that Mrs. Portilla had with her company, then we're going to lose on that contract point. This case has got to be decided on traditional contract principles.
And your argument is anytime a supervisor tells an employee, you're doing a good job, and as long as you do a good job, you have a job with us. That creates an oral contract and takes it out of at-will doctrine. Is that your position?
That's right, unless there's avoidance defenses such as mutuality, lack of consideration, that sort of thing, which we do not have in this case. The sole question is a no evidence point.
I thought you said in your opening remarks that some isolated, open-ended statement would not be sufficient.
A statement such as a pat on the back, you're doing a great job, we hope you stay with the company a long time. That would be, and I agree, that would be a symbol of hope. But see, that's where I disagree.
That's not an assurance.
No, it's not an assurance.
It's an entreaty. You're doing a good job, we hope you stay with us a long time. That's not saying you're doing a good job, and as long as you keep doing a good job, you've got a job.
Right, and as I thought about this, you know, I have a couple of three-year-old twin girls, and I tell them, you did a great job cleaning up your room. Thanks, lady. No. If you clean up your room, you get an ice cream. There's a big difference between a pat on the back and a promise, and this is what Goodyear admitted at trial they did.
Mr. Griffin, I'm assuming that you're like most law firms, you have, you know, secretaries, paralegals, and other people that assist you in your work. And you, from time to time, no doubt tell them, as long as you do a good job, you have a job with our firm. Are you creating a situation here like you have here, or do you consider your employees at will?
I consider my secretary not at will, because they are told to keep their job, they have to be able to do these things.
So you could not fire her except for good cause?
That is my agreement with her, that as long as her performance...
Your other employee.
I don't know what the other lawyers in the firm is. I don't know what the policy... I don't know what the agreements they've worked out with their employees. The bottom line is, when she asked me, I tell her honestly. And when Mrs. Portilla asked, she was entitled to an honest answer, not an answer with the fingers tied behind their back.
And does it only take one assurance like that, or is it... And does the assurance last then indefinitely until the performance changes, or do you have to have repeated assurances, as was the case here?
The courts of Texas have never held that it has to be more than one agreement. The courts of Texas have never held that. In this case, though, we're talking about repeated, ongoing, specific questions about job performance. And what's really interesting, and I hope the court will look at the record on this, because at trial, They tried a different case than what they're arguing today, because when they were asked at trial, is it Goodyear's position that you had a right, despite these agreements, to fire her? And the answer was yes. And then the following question, so it's Goodyear's position that even though she was made these promises, and that the promises were made with those who had the authority to make them, that you could fire her anyway, and the answer was yes. The reason that's important, because this case was fought not on exceptions to at will. The record will reflect that they fought this case on we didn't fire her. She up and quit. That's where the battle line was at this trial, and their fallback position was then, when we made these promises, they are not enforceable because of the statute of frauds. And finally, they argued that she didn't have as much damage as that she claimed that she had.
Mr. Griffin, I'm confused as to what you said the company policy was. Didn't I understand you to say that the company policy was that the managers were to talk to the employees and to encourage them and to insist that as long as they did a good job, did have a job, this was company policy?
That's correct.
And that they recognized that there was a different situation for employees than for the company managers, that the company managers could be fired for any whim, but the company the managers were told that the company policy was that you encourage your employees and tell them that they're not going to be whimsically fired, but as long as they do a good job. Isn't that what you told me?
There was if I said that there was any evidence as to what company officers in Akron were told, I don't think there was any evidence in this trial
Didn't you say, though, that they went to these managers' meetings and were told that this is the way that they're supposed to handle their personnel?
That's right. When the store managers were being management training, Justice Hightower, they would be taught, according to this record, to instill in their employees a sense of job security, and that corporate officers who testified at trial said, the reason why we think there's nothing wrong with them telling the employees they have job security is because it lowers turnover and keeps them from looking for other work.
Is this testimony of managers in the trial?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Is there any written record of company policy on personnel policy that says that?
Yes, Your Honor, there is.
That is in evidence.
That is in evidence, and it is not. I don't want to get myself into the manual creating a contract, because that's not what we're here about. But the manual, though, being conceded by Goodyear as being a two-way street and a mutual understanding, we say, and the jury heard, that that's evidentiary of their intent of why they made the agreement with Hortensia Portilla. They made the agreement to keep her from looking for other work and so that she would stay at that store, which she did for 22 years.
And I don't understand. You say you're not here arguing that the manual creating contract, but you're saying there is a contract nevertheless.
Contract, Your Honor, was formed when she asked the question about her job security, and she was told that she would keep her job as long as she did her job correctly. That's right. That is the contract, and that happened time and time and time again. And Goodyear's argument, Justice Hightower, is that we didn't really mean that to be a contract. Well, the problem with that argument is this court has stated on numerous occasions, and Chief Justice Greenhill and the Scott versus Engle brothers says, people do business in informal ways. We got an employee, an unsophisticated employee. But Chief Justice Greenhill says it's a question of fact of whether it's a compliment, a pat on the back, or whether they intended that to be an agreement.
Was what Mrs. Hortensia was told, was it any different from what her co-workers were told?
Only one co-worker testified, and that was one of the store managers testified that he was under the understanding that he would have job security so long as he did his job correctly. That was the evidence of the store manager. And the real problem when we talk about at will, Justice Hightower, when they were asked at trial, is it or is it not true that five-year employees, those employees are not at will at all, but instead are employees who can be terminated only for good cause? Isn't that true? And Goodyear's answer at trial was, that's right. And that is the fiction, as I see it, about this case. Everything about this record, even the ex-officer who was found on the golf course in his affidavit, you know it hurt him to write it. The Goodyear I worked for was not an at-will company. We never pretended to be an at-will company. We never put it in our manual. We never told our employees we're at-will. And what kind of situation do we have with business where the Brown and Roots of the world let their employees know from the get-go they're at will, and they face the turnover that you're going to have with employees who don't have job security. And here's a company who says just the opposite, the very antithesis of at will, who then, after 22 years, says, well, our hands were behind our back. We're really not going to be bound to the admitted promises that were made. And it seems to me a little incongruous that they would admit the existence of this agreement and call it promises and call them agreements at trial and then come to this court and say there's no evidence to support it. And confession and avoidance are one thing, but they cannot, in my view, ask this court to rub out the record, to rub out the cases that have enforced agreements just like this, when all they have brought in front of this court is a no evidence point. And that's all we really have on this fact-specific record, is that there's more than a scintilla of evidence supporting this contract.
For us to affirm the Court of Appeals, do we have to approve satisfaction contracts, or do I understand you to say we don't need to address the viability of satisfaction contracts?
If I didn't say it, I meant to say that, Justice Cornyn, and that's exactly right. The satisfaction contracts got into the Court of Appeals on the statute of fraud form because there are lots of satisfaction contracts holding that those contracts are not subject to the statute of fraud. That point has not been carried forward to this court. So our view is that the Court of Appeals may have used terms. They say in one place, Justice Gonzalez, that there's evidence of a satisfaction contract. In the next page, they say there's evidence of a good cause contract. Maybe they mingled their terms, but it doesn't have any application in this no evidence point. Now, I'm going to respond very briefly to Roe, because they have cited Roe in the most recent brief. There are five things different about Roe than what we got. The Michigan Supreme Court said there was no mutuality of contract. The Montgomery Ward had given the employees document after document after document that says you're at will, that there was no inquiries about job security, that it was a voluntary, single, isolated statement, and that the company's policy that was expressed to all of its employees where they were at will, much like in Dutchman. So Roe doesn't have anything to do with the Texas cases that have approved these sorts of agreements in the past. And this court, at least the Commission of Appeals, has said on numerous occasions, when you bargain away by promises to an employee the at-will doctrine, then you bargained it away. And there's nothing inherently wrong or against contract notions for people to contract however they want to contract.
Mr. Griffin, if Goodyear's employee had told Ms. Portilla that, you understand, Ms. Portilla, you're here at will, that is, you could be fired at any time for any reason, but you've been doing a good job, you've been a good employee of this company, and we expect you will be here for as long as you want to be here. Would that be different?
I think it would be different. I think it would be different because once the employee has been told, as in Dutchman, that you are at will, and no matter what we say or do, the employee and the employer have a right to bargain away the right to modify at will.
Do I understand part of the distinction you're making then is that Goodyear should have, if they wanted to avoid a employment contract, should have told her you are at will, and that would have wiped the slate clean in terms of any other representations or agreements?
An employee who doesn't talk about job security can do nothing, Justice Cornyn. All they have to do is keep their mouth shut. They're at will. But yes, if they are going to make false promises about job security, those employers who want to make false promises need to get something in writing that says no matter what we tell you, you are at will.
So if this record had one statement, oral or written statement, telling Ms. Portilla that she was at will, she would lose her case. Is that your contention?
I don't think that once a contract is formed that you can undo a contract. And so after she'd spent 22 years and later they said we want to change your contract and make you at will, unless that was bargained for under traditional contract notions, then no, they would not be able to do that. Rather, Justice Cornyn, that would be a breach of the agreement.
And you think that's a fact question for the jury?
Which is a fact question?
Whether it is at will or whether there's an employment contract under those circumstances.
The jury must answer the question of whether or not there was an agreement and that the parties intended to make that agreement. That's what Chief Justice Greenhill has told us, and that's why we think on this record there's more than a scintilla of evidence to support that finding of the jury.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Counsel, is it correct that for you to prevail, we have to prove that there is absolutely no evidence of any kind to support the jury finding in this case?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that's exactly the way the case is formulated, but that is our position, that there is no evidence to support the jury's finding.
Well, put another way, if we find any evidence, more than a scintilla, that there is some evidence that would support that jury finding, that Goodyear agreed that it would not discharge Ms. Patea, you lose.
Your Honor, I believe that the cases, and I referred earlier to cases that say that in order to overcome a presumption of at-will employment, there has to be a contract, and it has to be specific, and it has to directly limit the employer's right to terminate employment at will. The cases also say that that the contract has to, the agreement must, in a meaningful and special way, overcome that presumption. And the cases in particular that we have cited that talk about that are the Benoit case from the Beaumont Court of Appeals and the Stiver case from the Houston 14th Court of Appeals.
So I take it the answer is yes, that if we include contrary to your point of error number two, that there is some evidence to support the jury's finding that Goodyear agreed it wouldn't discharge Ms. Portilla except for good cause, that you lose.
I believe that's right, Your Honor, and what I'm suggesting is that in order to find some evidence, the court should look for evidence that is sufficient to create a contract, and that there is no evidence of that kind in this record.
If we follow the approach that you have recommended to us today, aren't we really sanctioning and approving employers misleading employees concerning the degree of their job security instead of, as your opposing counsel suggested, being out front, as he suggested, Brown and Root, some of the other employers are, that you can be fired by noon if we don't like your looks?
Your Honor, first of all, what he is suggesting would turn the burden here upside down. There is no burden on the part of employers at this time under the decisions of this court and other Texas courts to inform employees that they are at will. That's inherent in the employment relationship unless and until the parties intentionally form a contract that changes that.
Wouldn't there be some duty not to inform them to the contrary, though? Not to assure them to the contrary or mislead them to the contrary?
Your Honor, I don't know of any duty that's been recognized by the cases. There have been cases involving fraud. There have been cases involving
insurance. What I'm saying is if you don't want a contract, then you've got to be silent. You can't imply to them that there is one. You can't assure them that there is one. You cannot mislead them that there is one if you don't want one, unless you want to be bound by it.
Your Honor, I don't believe that Ms. Portilla was misled, and if the court will read the statements that were made to her, I don't think they are misleading. I do not think in any sense they imply the formation of a contract or agreement.
Whether they are or not, your reading of the law of Texas is that it's perfectly all right for an employer to mislead an employee concerning the degree of job security, so long as that employer doesn't go so far as to actually create a binding contract.
Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that employers ought to be free to mislead. That's
but
not
that they're
position.
Permitted to do so under the existing law of the state of Texas.
I'm suggesting that their ability to terminate an employee under a policy such as we have here, which is a non-discriminatory policy of broad application, that ability should not be terminated or altered unless they consciously contract to give it away. Now that's really what my position is. I think that one other point that I want to emphasize is that Mr. Griffin may have put on evidence of a satisfaction contract, if that is a valid theory of contract law, but that's not the issue that was submitted to the jury. The issue was whether there was a contract for that Ms. Portillo would not be discharged except for good cause, and there is simply no evidence of that kind of an agreement or contract.
How do you respond, Mr. Burch, to Mr. Griffin's argument that this case, we don't need to make new law under existing law, particularly the Scott case? Question of whether or not there's an oral agreement, is a contract or not, is an issue of fact. And that's what we have here, no more, no less.
Your Honor, I don't view this as a case in candor that really involves an exception like Sabine or the Houston Chronicle case. It is a question of contract law, and can and should be decided under existing Texas law.
Thank you very much.
I want to be sure I understood what you just said. You agree that this is a question of evidence. This is not a question of an exception to at-will doctrine. That's what he argued, and if I heard you correctly, you just agreed that this case is not about any exception to the at-will doctrine. This case is about whether there was evidence in the record to support a good cause contract.
Yes, sir. I do agree with that, and we have argued that if this principle is recognized, it swallows up and makes the at-will principle pretty much moot. But that is not a Sabine-type exception.
At the very least, it would be a swearing match between the employer and the employee.
That's what it will invite, yes, sir.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Counselor.
Take a short recess.
Sure. Please rise.